History was made on Sunday as two women's football teams marched onto the pitch in Croke Park for the first time ever.
Even compared to like maybe the first Ireland I went to where it is now, it's incredible.
To me, it's the biggest development of a field sport in the world, ladies football. It is quite incredible.
It's more than a match. It's what you're doing for the community, what you're doing for parents from all backgrounds, how you're bringing children together in the town.
Like, ladies football has gone to a whole new level, you know, it's what dreams are made of.
Everybody's friends. As far as I'm concerned, the LGFA is all one big family.
Football is just the number one thing for me. I always think of it, dream of it. Football is my life. Like,
when you're in the moment, it's your life. Like, it's the whole, do you know what I mean? It's all you think about.
There's people out there who sweated blood.
I remember my mother buying me my first pair of boots, and I wouldn't even try them on in the shop because it was for the young lad at home. For me,
it's really important that we look back at the origins of ladies' Gaelic football and how it started, and seen as a novelty after it. Today it's a serious, respective, competitive sport.
It's absolutely mind-boggling in a sense, like when you think back of where we started from, it's mind-blowing from where we started.
The very beginning, the thought that we just would quench is just a fad.
This is only a fad.
Now, the different skills that they're out there learning, like a lot of them are just saying they're so much more confident, they're able to speak up and they have a bit more belief in kind of what they're trying to achieve.
I always remembered how insecure I kind of felt like going out onto the pitch, looking different from everyone else. I grew confident in myself then with that support around me.
Once you enter the dressing room and you're in your jersey, you just want to get out.
The beauty of football, it is very simple. You're just instinctively playing, because at that level, everybody can instinctively play.
The LGFA opened up new opportunities for women in sport, not just in terms of playing, but in terms of giving women an opportunity to get involved in administration and like coaching, which previously wouldn't have been that accessible.
Committees are equally as much of a team as the players that are taken to the field.
The volunteers don't get paid, not because they're worthless, because they're priceless.
When people give up years and years of their lives to help other people, show their goodness, that's just invaluable in them. Sunrise over the water, I
swam over and under. Get lost in all the wonder, never come. It doesn't matter who you are, what age you are, she kind of makes everyone feel welcome coming in the door. That's what club is all about.
There's a huge thousands of hours, years of effort building a club, building a kind of a community.
I take great pride in saying that I'm a member of the LGFA.
There were some great memories. I'll die with them. Do you know what I mean? You can't forget them. To take me years to tell you the rest.
Some of the LGFA voices over the past half century as women's Gaelic football celebrates its 50th birthday this year. It's a fitting time to bring the stories and journey of the association together in one place, in one book. Tonight, the Sligo launch of Unladylike, a history of ladies Gaelic football, written by a Sligo woman, Hayley Kilgallen. Welcome to the final whistle on Ocean FM. This is Austin O'Callaghan, and we're coming to you tonight from Hayley's home club, St. Mary's in Sligo. It's all tickets in St. Mary's at this stage at Kent Park, and joining us tonight, a range of people from the LGFA in Sligo and beyond. Lots of St. Mary's folk, family, friends and connections here as well. But I can see people here tonight from CT Gales, from Colwy St. Joseph's, from St. John's, from Drumcliff Ross's Point, from Owen Rua and many other counties across the land, across the Yates County. Even Ballina Stephenites, I think, are here tonight. They've been let in, so they're welcome across the county border. So coming up, folks, in a short while, we will chat with Hayley about her book, which began life as part of her college studies in Dublin. But we want to set the mood in this 50th birthday year for the LGFA by talking about the evolution of women's Gaelic football. And we're going to meet some of the audience members here tonight. There are a lot of people here who have invested so much time, energy and passion in the LGFA through various guises. And we've invited three on stage here tonight who've been around Gaelic football in this country in some fashion or another for quite some time. Let me introduce you to them. The first lady is from St. Nathie's and Sligo. She was inducted into the LGFA Volunteer Hall of Fame just 3 years ago for her contributions as a player, a volunteer and administrator. She helped get the LGFA off the ground in earnest in Sligo in early 1993. In a 10-year inter-county career, a nippy corner forward she was, she won a National League medal with Sligo in 1995 and an All-Ireland later that year. They beat Carlo. She managed Sligo to two Croke Park appearances in an All-Ireland final, back-to-back years in the noughties, and has held a range of positions at club, at county, at provincial and national level. I'm speaking, of course, of Kathleen Kane. Now, in Leitrim, they'll tell you that the first person to get a football All-Star in the county was a very famous Aughawillan man, Mickey Quinn. But that's not entirely true, and Mickey knows it too, because he knows deep down that one of his Aughawillan primary school classmates got to the All-Star altar before him. She's a native of Aughawillan in Leitrim. She comes from a very famous Leitrim LGFA family. The Intermediate All-Ireland Cup, which her native Leitrim won this year, is named after her late mum, Mary Quinn, another LGFA stalwart. She won two football All-Stars in her playing days. And believe it or believe it not, she hasn't retired yet. She's still playing junior club football with Aughawillan in Leitrim. Today, Colry is her home. She's been involved with Colry St. Joseph's, and she was a county board officer in Sligo, where she's lived for the last 30 years. In fact, she has a distinction that no GAA person or LGFA person, we think, has on this island. She was a Sligo County Board officer when she was playing for Leitrim against Sligo. Beat that with a good stick. Ladies and gentlemen, Deirdre Quinn. And completing our full forward line tonight is the current Uachtaráin of the LGFA. And yes, he's male. Men have played a key role in the development of the LGFA as well. Castle Connor and Sligo by birth. But he's made Donegal his home for the last number of years. He famously managed the Donegal women's Gaelic football team to an All-Ireland Intermediate title in 2010. And they came back 6 years later and won a Division 2 National League title. He's involved with, he's affiliated with Formasters GA Club in Donegal Town, but I have seen him down in Sligo cheering on Owen Rua from time to time. I think there's a couple of family connections there. He's in the final home straight of his presidency with the LGFA, Micheál Nochtain. Folks, you're welcome. Kathleen Kane, I have to ask, I see you here on stage with your arm in a sling and a broken collarbone and a broken wrist and battered and bruised. Please tell me that you're not back playing Gaelic football.
In the 12 years that I played Gaelic football, the most I ever got was a fractured big toe. It doesn't get any more exciting other than falling off a trailer emptying a load of turf. Will I ever get since? And I thought I was a young one. Until I hit the ground and my body went crash.
Well, there's a part of me relieved that it's not a football injury and that you're okay. That's the first bit. Tell me, you're reading Unladylike at the moment. What are your early impressions of this book?
Well, tonight I should be in the US because I was due to fly last Sunday. So when TJ rang me a few weeks ago, I thought, oh dear, I'm not going to make the launch. And I really wanted to be here for Hayley. So it's an ill wind because I've managed to get 150 pages of the book read in the last 2 days, and it's riveting. For anybody who hasn't had a chance to read it yet, it's so well structured, it's so well researched, it's unbelievable. It really takes Lady Sport all the way back from the 1890s and how the rugby and the GA were set up in the 1880s, and they were for men only, and the struggles that our four mothers, four sisters, and four fathers had in trying to get us to where we are today. It has been articulated so well in the book, and she's just done a wonderful job.
Deirdre, yeah? Deirdre, what do you think of the name of the book, Unladylike?
Well, I'm actually quite familiar with that because back when I've been involved with on the national level since 1978, 79, that's when Leitrim started, and at that time we were continually trying to get the GAA to kind of recognise us, you know, and they did, they had set up a committee to investigate us. And this was the take from it, that they were very concerned about women getting breast cancer and all that kind of thing. And then they said, but they'd gone to see the experts, and the experts said, absolutely, anybody doing exercise, that's terrific, no question of that. But they
Sorry, as a young fellow, just back up there, are you saying there was a theory that playing Gaelic football could give you breast cancer?
Yes, yes. Dr. Mick Loftus and one or two other, Dr. Kennedy, was it? Involved in that study, and that was, but the Mater Hospital, I forget who, some of the other experts said, no, that's not a question. But the final comment and the end of the thing was, we can't kind of see anything wrong with it, and if we don't get involved, if we don't let them get involved in GAA, they could probably go off playing soccer. But it does no harm, but I wouldn't want some of my daughters to do it. It's unladylike. So
we'll come back to that later in the programme, but you've given us food for thought there. Micheál Nochtun Uachtaráin, thank you for being with us tonight, because I know you have about 9 or 10 different places to be at once. You've mastered the art of bi-location. This has been a very is a special year for the LGFA, a relatively young sporting organisation, but a half a century, a 50th birthday is an important milestone.
Yes, Austin, I mean, you know, this year is a very special year for our association. It's a year that basically we look back and reflect, and I think basically, you know, 2 years ago, Hayley approached, you know, the LGFA in relation to doing this book and that, and Helen said it to me, and we took Hayley in to meet the management at Croke Park one night, and, you know, that was a win-win for everybody in our association, because Hayley was one of our own. She started playing here with this club when she was under 12, and for her to come in and write about the history of our association, and as Hayley probably has alluded to in our book, you know, there's a small bit of information on websites and in small counties, I mean, but there's nothing official. And to think that basically we're here in St Mary's Club in Sligo tonight, and one of your own, a Sligo lady, wrote the first book in relation to ladies football, is a huge, huge special occasion for Hayley and our family, and that, and for everybody involved here with the club St Mary's in Sligo. But I mean, for our association, and that, I mean, it's a win-win, as I said, because we had nothing on paper. And to see the standard of the book, and to see the amount of stuff that's basically in this, and Hayley launched this book basically to all our association at our anniversary down in Thurles in the 18th of June, where our association was formed, and we had a celebration down this year, and Hayley gave us an oversight into the book that day and talked us through it and that, and the standard and the amount of information she had collected was huge, and it was, you know, it didn't happen very easily. There was a lot of time and a lot of effort put into that, and I think basically what we have here is something beautiful in the book, The Unladylike, and I think basically she summarised what ladies football is all about and that.
Sure. Kathleen, when you were flicking through this book, the pages you've read so far, did it spark any memories from your earliest days in women's Gaelic football, whether it was playing or administrating?
Well, I think one of the things that I took from it today was, at some part of the book, Hayley highlights the fact that the clubs in Ulster, the counties in Ulster, weren't able to get their structures as quickly as some of the other provinces. Particularly said that nearly in the late 80s, the early 90s, it took before they got going. And it reminded me of, I suppose, how privileged we feel nowadays, because on the 15th of August, 1998, I was in Omagh, the day of the Omagh bombing. And I was travelling with Angela Doohan and Marty Duffy, the referee. Marty was refereeing a game between Tyrone and Warwickshire. So we went up the main street in Omagh at 2:20 in the afternoon, and the bomb went off at 3:10. So the pitch overlooked the town, a little bit like Markovitch Park and here, only it was on a higher level. So I was the umpire at the goalpost, and I'll never forget when the bomb went off. I didn't know what it was. And the goalkeeper, Tyrone goalkeeper, said to me, as plain as I like milk in my tea. She said, "Och, it must have been a bomb." And I nearly lost my life. I thought, this is unbelievable. So by halftime, news had trickled through from one of the lines people's wives. She'd been downtown shopping, and she said there had been a bomb, and there had been a number of fatalities. So because Marty was driving a Southern registered car, they just recommended that we'd finish out the game but leave directly afterwards and get back down over the border again. So, of course, my mum, Lord mercy on her, and Angela Doohan's mum were going ballistic because they couldn't get through to our phones and they knew that we were in Oma. But anyways, we got back home safe and sound, and later on that night we discovered 29 people had been killed. But it literally wasn't our time. And I realised here we were, everything was going great in the Republic in 1998, but only like an hour and a half up the road, we only missed a bomb by 40 minutes. So that's something that Hayley has highlighted in her book. And I just, as I say, what I've read so far is just excellent. You've captured the essence of what, not necessarily ladies' football is, but female sport.
Deirdre Quinn, you come from a very well-known football family in Leitrim, in LGFA circles in particular. You and your two sisters played. I know there's a lot of you in the clan. Your mum, of course, the All-Ireland Cup we mentioned at the start of the programme is named after. What was football always in the DNA of the Quinns, or, you know, for the females in the house, where did it kickstart in your memory?
Well, I suppose we were reared on my father loved talking about, and I always thought he was maybe like a second Mick O'Connell or something till I grew up. Do you know what I mean? We were reared on his tales of woe, mostly, with Aughwillan. They never seemed to win a county final. They were always beaten in the final. But anyway, it was huge. It was huge talked about in the thing. And then as we grew up, the boys would have been playing, and that meant we were left to make the cows and make the hay. I just think that was never fair, you know, because cars would roll up at the end of the lane and they'd go off. And then the other thing was, at that time, there used to be all the festivals. Remember the Ballinamore Festival, the Drumahair, the Drumshamble Festival? And they used to have, like, they'd have nail-hitting, car-tire-changing women's competitions. And ladies' football, they were just to have a laugh, like, you know. And I used to be so mad. I used to say, this is, it was so, I felt it was so disrespectful to women. And so I used to always say, when I got big enough, I'd start it.
You helped get the LGFA going in Leitrim. And yeah. I'm just wondering now, when you think back then to the challenges you had getting things going, whether it was playing or administrating, and you compare to where... Yeah. In its 50th year, the LGFA is getting to you.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it's light years away. Light years away. When I got involved, I got involved in the very beginning at Central Council. Tom O'Dowd was the president then, Luke Thron then. And there was, at the time, I only remember, there was about, because teams just come and go. At that stage, Tipperary had won the first All-Ireland or so. And they were gone at that stage. Roscommon had also won All-Ireland. Now, there was a Mrs. Nocton used to come, who was a divil on the rule book. And I remember, I always remember her at the Central Council meetings.
No relation.
but we literally, we used to be organising things. It was all the time trying to organise pitches and money. We had no money. I remember talking about, it'd be like after an All-Ireland, can we have tea and sandwiches for the team? And our meetings would be in a pub. This would be palatial compared. We'd be in a, you know, a nook in a pub somewhere that we'd have our meetings. This would be down in Tullamore mostly. So that we gradually got bigger. And the real turning point was, in fact, I was initially on the national executive of National PRO, and I remember trying to contact RTE, and they had just done at the time Marion Finucane. Had done, you know, the women in it was a women's programme, and they'd done a thing on, actually they must have thought it was kind of bizarre, so they got Sligo and Leitrim, we were the counties they picked, and did a programme with us up there, and they said, oh well, we've just done a programme with the women and that's it, and there's not an awful lot to go on anyway, we're not going to be doing that very soon. The person who really pushed it was the GA president, McDonough. he was wonderful. And the time TG Cahill was starting up, and he very much got us, and that has made
that's Galway's huge, Joe McDonough you're referring to.
Joe McDonough, yeah. Sorry. I'm very, I said, I was telling, I'd expect Kathleen to get these things right for me. But, yeah, and he was very good. He really supported us and really pushed it, and he was the person, I think, that got us involved to, and that made a complete difference. And plus, at that stage, we then were able to get staff, and we were very, very lucky. While I maybe had my disagreements with Helen O'Rourke in the beginning, things and how things were going, whatever, but she has been fantastic. We have been so lucky in our chief executive. Okay. She has been amazing and yeah, very forward-thinking and, yeah, just great.
And we're going to talk more about the evolution of the LGFA over the last while with Hayley Kilgallen, author of Unladylike, in a couple of moments. But Micheál Nochtain, as Uachtaráin, you know, we're reflecting on the first 50 years of the LGFA. This might be a hard question to answer. What do you think the next 50 years of the Ladies Gaelic Football Association might look like?
Well, I mean, you know, looking forward, I mean, we have built an association that we are extremely, extremely proud of. And we had a management meeting last night, and I mean, and for the first time ever, we have 2,000 members. And that, so it's a huge for our association with the mountain membership. But that didn't happen by accident. That mean it happened by our volunteer basis and the people on the ground that basically do so much for our association right around, you know, the four corners of this country. And that, but looking forward to basically the next few years, we're in integration at the moment, and that, and integration will happen, and that it won't be the finished article come 2027 when it will be released. I mean, there will be teetings with it. But I mean, I think the biggest fear for a lot of people, and people were straight and honest, I think the biggest fear is money, and that. And I don't want to be disrespectful, I mean, but I mean, when we look at GAA teams and see the money that's being spent on GAA teams at the moment, men's senior teams, I mean, there's county boards and there's chair people sitting down there, and they're thinking, if we take in the ladies and the ladies come in with, are we going to get the same amount of money again? And the reality of the situation is the GAA will have to take less for us to get more. And you know, we're all realistic, we all realise basically it's the one part it'll be all coming out of. But I mean, as an association, I mean, together we're better. And I think if we're to look at the GAA being started today, that basically there would be no division. We'd be all one. And the GAA would not be as strong today without the ladies of this country. They've been the backbone of the clubs right around. I mean, they did so much down through the years to make the GAA and that. So we're all the one people, we're all the one family and that. And I think basically together we'll be stronger and we'll be better. And basically ladies football will be there, and basically we get the recognition that we deserve, that we've been fighting for over the last 50 years.
Okay. Kathleen Kane, just to finish on this, as someone who's been a champion of the women's game since you first got into it back in the early 90s, late 80s, whenever it was, are you excited, apprehensive about a potential amalgamation? Would you worry that the LGFA might get subsumed into the mothership, so to speak? Or can the three associations afford it, as Micheál has highlighted there, too? Be one entity?
Well, I think, are we going to be subsumed into the mothership? I would say no, we're not. In that we're going to hold our identity, we're going to hold our central council, our provincial councils, our county boards. I think it will happen at, you know, there is coordination between Helen and Micheál and the senior people on each of the Gaelic Games families. But I can't imagine that there's a GAA person in the country that wants to take over ladies football fixtures or ladies football finances. So I think we'll hold on to what we have. And to be fair, like, you know, our association, we don't own a blade of grass. Not a blade of grass in the country do we own. So, like, we are dependent on the goodwill of all the clubs. And, you know, so we have a good working relationship with the GAA as things stand. And as Micheál said, it is only going to get better in the future.
Folks, great thoughts and insights, and there's lots more we could talk about on this, but I am conscious of the time here. So would you please show your appreciation tonight for Kathleen Kane, for Micheál Nochtain, and for Deirdre Quinn. Folks, thank you very much. We're going to take a short commercial break on Radio Land, and when we come back, we will talk to the author of Unladylike, Hayley Kilgallen. Join us in about 4 minutes.
Final Whistle with Austin O'Callaghan.
And you're welcome back to St. Mary's LGFA Clubhouse in Sligo for the Sligo launch of Unladylike, a history of ladies Gaelic football. And we're going to talk now with the author of this book, the first of its kind on this 50th birthday of the LGFA. Please welcome St. Mary's own Hayley Kilgallen. I threw this at Deirdre Quinn before the break, Hayley, so I'll throw it at you. Why have you called the book Unladylike?
Well, I think Deirdre spoke really well to experience there, and I guess the bottom line is it was thought that the idea of women playing Gaelic football was unladylike. And I've seen Deirdre mention that committee that was set up between the GAA and the LGFA when the LGFA were looking for recognition. And I have seen written down in a document the GAA's view, their point number one against women playing Gaelic football was that it was unladylike. And, you know, when the conversations with the publishers about doing the book, trying to sum up a title in one word to encapsulate 50 years of the LGFA, we just felt that this was a really strong word to capture, I guess, the resilience of the membership of the LGFA and how far they've come, and kind of reclaim this idea that, you know, it's not unladylike for women to play Gaelic football. We are absolutely well capable of doing it, and it's a great game, so why not claim it a little bit and tell people that it's not.
And it's a game you played pretty well and still do play at the moment.
That might be debatable.
Well, people here in St. Mary's know you fairly well, but for people listening on the radio tonight, whether at home or in the car, just for some context, you played with St. Mary's at various levels, and Conor Conway, the club chairman here, mentioned before we came on air that you captained various Mary's teams at various underage levels, and you're still playing today in Dublin.
Yeah, so we were talking, a few of us here before kicked off this evening, reminiscing about we'd some fantastic teams at St. Mary's, like through under 14, under 16, under 18. Very lucky to be very successful with them as well, so that made it even more enjoyable. So yeah, since I've been under 12, I've been playing Gaelic football. It's been a really important part of my life, something I get great enjoyment out of. And I'm now living in Dublin, so I'm not playing with St. Mary's anymore. I hope they'll forgive me for that. But enjoying playing football up in Dublin with a great club, Portobello. I think we've two girls from Dublin. Everyone else is spread out from coming from different places across Ireland and even the States and the US and Australia. So it's a great social club. So the level of football might not be that great for some people here.
And a lovely Irish thing, Hayley, people like to know who you belong to. You're not the only well-known Kilgallen in your house. Mum and Dad are vaguely familiar, aren't they?
Some people might know them all right. Mum's footballing exploits probably aren't known, though, at all. All the interest comes from
Dad. You better tell them who we're talking about.
So Mum is Eileen Magner, better known for her role as the Northwest correspondent with RTÉ, that she retired from that position earlier this year. And Dad is TJ Kilgallen, who played with Mayo back in the 80s and 90s.
But your mum's from Kilkenny, so you're probably a cracking hurler, just you don't know it yet. Anyway, can you hold up the cover of your book? You have it there on your lap. And can you tell me who the woman on the front cover is, please?
So right in the centre of the book, holding the Brendan Martin Cup, is Kitty Ryan. And she was the captain of the Tipperary team that won the first ever LGFA All-Ireland title in 1974. Yeah, it's a fantastic photo. Kitty is held up on the shoulders of her teammates. We actually looked at a couple of different photos for the cover of the book, but this was my favourite because of just the joy on all the players' faces, and that you can get that feeling of pride in their exploits and the feeling part of a team. So it resonated a lot with me as a player.
It doesn't look like Croke Park.
It is not Croke Park. This is Durrow in County Leash. There was no ladies Gaelic football played in Croke Park until 1986. That was the first time the LGFA got access to the famous ground.
What has been the most revelatory thing in putting this book together, would you say?
I think for me it's the reaction that many people had to women playing Gaelic football. So obviously there's this idea that it's unladylike, and this view is held by the GAA. But you know, I spent a lot of time looking through newspaper archives, and you see find different letters and opinion pieces, whether from the public or from sports writers, giving out about women playing Gaelic football. They're wondering what's next. What are women trying to do now? Because this is all happening at the same time that women are, you know, looking for better employment status and better rights and a better place under the law. And now they're thinking they're taking over a man's place on the football pitch as well. It doesn't sit right with a lot of people.
Yeah. Where did you start?
So I started by going on the LGFA website to see what was there, and there was a little bit of information. And then I went to the GAA history books, because there's plenty of those, and I thought, well, they must have a bit of information about the history of the LGFA as well. But I found that generally it was a short paragraph, maybe a page, maybe two, on the role of women in the GAA, whether that's as a sandwich maker or a kit washer or just a supporter, but very much as in service to the GAA. So I went back to newspapers, putting in searches for ladies Gaelic football, what's the earliest I could find? And the earliest I could find was that there was a game in 1920 in Dublin. I can't find out much more about it. I don't know who organised it or why it was organised. I know the two teams were Inchicore and Templeogue. But the most interesting thing might be that the Dublin GAA County Board put out a notice just before the game saying if any of their members helped with the fixture going ahead, they would be banned from GAA activities. Because they don't say it explicitly, but they didn't think women should be playing Gaelic football. Now, the game did go ahead, and there's a photo from the game. It's in the book as well. The women are wearing long skirts chasing after a football, but there's a pretty big crowd there. So it shows that from 1920, women did want to play Gaelic football. They just didn't have the support in society or from organisations like the GAA to get it off the ground.
And there are a few instances like this in the early years of women's Gaelic football. I know you've reproduced a letter sent by a Cork farmer. It's kind of famous in women's Gaelic football, where he writes to the editor of a Dublin paper suggesting that women shouldn't be allowed to attend a GAA match in Dublin, let alone play it.
Yeah, I often wonder how his letter is strongly worded. I would wonder what he would have written if he was to give out about women playing in Croke Park. But he says it's revolting and unnatural, and that they should be content with their lot at home, and that they're taking up valuable space in Croke Park. And this was 1967, not that long ago. But it's heartening. A week later, the Sunday Times print all the responses to the letter, and every single one of them is giving out to the farmer. One person actually says he should be shot for his view. So people are feeling quite strongly about it, and they very much push back against his outdated view. And that's why you do get ladies Gaelic football starting to emerge then in the late 60s, because society is rethinking the place of women in Irish society. And Deirdre alluded to some of the carnivals and festivals that were happening around this time, and that's where ladies Gaelic football really gets going, because they have this space to try out a new game. And though it's a novelty act at first, women and girls are enjoying playing football. People see that they are capable of playing it, and it's a good game, and that's how it becomes more competitive and evolves into the setting up of the LGFA.
Okay. Any pleasant surprises along the way when you were researching the book?
I think some of the stories you read about the players and their experiences, you know, that they really push back against all this negative opinion. And I think it made me realise that, you know, things haven't changed that much. Like, their main motivation for playing Gaelic football was that they wanted to go out and have fun, and they wanted to play with their friends, and it was a social aspect. I think that's very much the same today. And then just seeing the progress over the last 50 years, like, the book is written chronologically, so you see the progress being made quite quickly. The 70s and 80s, they're still just establishing themselves, and that they don't fade away is really, a success of the LGFA. But then they start to have huge success, big milestones, like getting a membership over 70,000, getting TG Cahir on board, getting Lidl on board in later years, and you see this real pride in the association starting to develop.
And as well as pride and challenges you've touched on there, there's nice humour in the book during the course. Can you tell people here listening about Sister Pauline Gibbons?
I can, of course, yes. So this is a more interesting story, or a novel story that I hadn't come across before. But in 1977, Roscommon made the All-Ireland final for the first time. They were due to play Cavan. But just before their All-Ireland semi-final, one of their players, Sister Pauline, moved to the UK to join a convent over there. But she was a key player for the team, and so Michael Nocton from the Roscommon County Board
Not
wrote,
the Michael Nocton who's here
no,
tonight.
No. He's done great service to the LGFA, but he's not around that long. Michael Nocton wrote to her mother superior over in the UK wondering could she get special permission to come back and play in the All-Ireland
Can
final.
Can I read the letter?
You
I
can.
Want to read the letter. I think it's cracking. It's a cracking letter. I'm just going to put it up here very quickly. Dear Mr. Nocton, thank you for your letter of the 7th instant concerning Sister Pauline Gibbons. We are very pleased to allow Sister Pauline to play for Roscommon, and arrangements have been made for her to go home on the 25th of October. We wish you every luck with the game. All the Augustine sisters will be cheering on your team on. We have told Sister Pauline to keep her eyes open, to keep her eyes on the ball, and to keep her eyes open for more vocations. So do not blame me if you are minus any players by the next All-Ireland final. That's Sister Mary Leone, Reverend Mother, a piece of class there.
Absolutely. And the sister, the story of Sister Pauline made headlines in Ireland, like RTE met her off the plane. It made the front pages of the Irish press. So people just were like so surprised that, well, the surprise anyway that Ladies Gaelic football, it's still a new game, but a surprise that a nun is playing Ladies Gaelic football just kind of adds to the whole story.
As a footballer yourself, Hayley, and as someone who was steeped in GAA, presumably through dad and mum growing up, has it changed your perspective on football and on the LGFA?
Yeah, it has. I think my perspective has changed in two ways. So firstly, as a player and the member of the LGFA, like this is why I started doing the research as a student 6 years ago doing my master's. I was embarrassed that I didn't know an awful lot about the history of the LGFA, and that's how I got into, kind of fell into this research. So it's given me a really strong appreciation now of all the hard work that goes in behind the scenes and that goes in at like administration level in terms of getting things organised, and this isn't happening by chance. Like it's very strategic, and all the time they're looking to grow the game and make it something that girls and women, and like even, you know, you don't stop your ladies' Gaelic football career at 30 or 40 or 50. Like they're contributing all the time to different initiatives for women to continue playing Gaelic football. So I have a stronger appreciation for that, but I think as a historian as well, because I'm doing this as part of a PhD research, I see ladies Gaelic football now and the founding of the LGFA as a really key moment in the transformation of Irish sport. Like that the LGFA contributed to getting more women, more girls involved in ladies Gaelic football and involved in sport, not just on the field but off the field as well, which has been hugely beneficial to so many people's lives.
So just to elaborate briefly on that, the PhD you're working on now is across all sports. There'll be an obvious emphasis, I'm guessing, on the LGFA, given what you've done to date.
Yes. So I'm focusing mainly on the history of ladies Gaelic football, but I'm looking at the wider history of women's sport in Ireland and what that tells us about how women's lives have changed over the last 50 years. And, you know, is sport the driver here, or is society driving the changes that are happening in sport? Because, you know, there's lots of research done in history on other parts of women's lives, and especially at like a political level, but we don't know so much about how women's lives were changing on the ground or their daily lives, and sport is just as an important part of that.
Okay. I know there's a lot of very knowledgeable and experienced LGFA people in the room, young and old, and I might If you'd like, anyone wants to make a comment or ask a question, please put up your hand and we might get a couple of words from the floor before we finish in the final moments here. I do see some very recognisable faces. Will there be a sequel, Hayley Kilgallen?
Well, I think this is the first, hopefully, of many books on the history of ladies' Gaelic football. You know, there's so many ways you could have gone about researching or writing a book like this. So I hope it's done justice to the history of the association and that the members can see their own part in it as well. But, you know, listening to some of the stories that Deirdre, Micheál and Kathleen had to share there, there's so many more interesting stories I think we can tell as well about the people who were involved in the association. And why not? There should hopefully be many more books on the history of women's sport on the shelves.
That would be good, that's for sure. Okay, Dean, I'm going to try and switch mics here and not put you under pressure, but there is one lady over here who caught my eye that I would like to get a word with, if I can borrow that radio mic of yours, if you have it. But I know that Fina Golden over there is a very well-known LGFA face in the Yates County and beyond, and I know that she helped Hayley with a few little bits and pieces of research and memorabilia in the early part of this book production. So I'm going to nip over here and have a quick chat with Fina in the last couple of minutes of the programme that we have. Fina, you have the book in your hand. Nice to meet you tonight.
Nice to meet
What are your thoughts on an evening like this?
I think it's a wonderful sign of where things have come from for ladies' Gaelic football. And I think one of the things that Hayley has brought out is that it's not just about ladies' sport, but it's about ladies in general and taking a place in society and the way that we have moved over the last 50 years. And for this book to come from somebody from Sligo with Mayo connections and with Kilkenny connections, well, it can't be anything but fantastic.
You've had a great LGFA life in many respects.
I have, and you know, it was. I suppose it started in one sense at home. I grew up in a village mostly with boys, so there was nothing to do except play football. And I went to a small school called Annaghmore, where there was two women teachers, and they insisted that the girls play football. And I suppose from there it went to just playing football every chance I could get. And it was only in 1993 that I started to play it seriously with the team. And it was wonderful, and I'm delighted that I have met so many people along the road. And I never thought back in 1993 that we would have an event like this where ladies football would be championed, you know, both in media and in sport and in community circles as well. And I'm just grateful that I've had an opportunity to be part of the journey.
Fina Golden, thank you for being with us tonight. Okay, folks, we're approaching the end of the programme here. I'll be getting an elbow in the ribs shortly with time and timekeeping. The news at 9 o'clock is on the way in just a moment. And Hayley's book is on sale here tonight. Sean Riley is here from Eason, and he'll be looking after you at the end of this programme. Have you enjoyed the journey, finally, Hayley, being an author?
Yeah. You know, the book came together quite quickly. A publisher only came on board in March, although we'd been working on it for quite a while through the PhD research and with the LGFA. So it was a hectic kind of couple of months getting it written and getting it edited and sourcing the photos. But it was hugely enjoyable, like met some really interesting people through it, and hearing their kind of, yeah, their pride in the LGFA and how it's evolved over the last 50 years. It's just been a privilege to be part of this huge anniversary.
I have an idea for the sequel, what it should be called. Maybe we drop the U and the N and just call it Ladylike. Hayley, congratulations on your publication. I think it's something that St. Mary's and Sligo in general and this part of the country are proud that it's someone local who put this together. Do you go on a book tour now? Do those sort of things happen?
I will be in Castlebar in a few weeks' time at their literary festival, and also an event in London as well. Really looking forward to that, and very keen to engage with other clubs if they're interested.
And you're playing with Portobello in Dublin still?
Yes. well, you know,
when
we're playing, yeah, okay. When we've got the numbers to play. Ask me if we're on tomorrow, if we've enough to field on Sunday, that might be a different story.
Okay. You're playing this weekend, are you?
Supposedly.
Okay. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, would you show your appreciation for the author of Unladylike, Hayley Kilgallen? And you'll find it in your local bookshops. Unladylike is for sale now. That's our lot from St. Mary's. I want to thank everybody here from the under 16 St. Mary's girls who were serving us tea and coffee so eloquently. To the senior players and to all the friends and supporters and to Conor Conway, the club chairperson, and his staff for making us so, feel so welcome. And what a laid out, beautifully laid out room it was as well. A reminder, this programme is available as a podcast on oceanfm.ie and wherever you get your podcast, simply search for Ocean FM Sport or The Final Whistle to find it. We're back next week with you, same time, same place, from St. Mary's. It's good night. Ocean FM.